It's time for the Outspoken Cyclist, your weekly conversation about bicycles, cyclists, trails, travel, advocacy, the bike industry, and much, much more. You can subscribe to our weekly podcast at OutspokenCyclist.com or through your favorite podcatching app to listen anytime. Now here's your host, Diane Jenks.
Hello and welcome to the Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Jenks, and this is our show for September 11th, 2021. Of course, the significance of the date is not lost on me, and I'm sure not on you either. I have vivid memories of that day 20 years ago, and it's sobering to think about the lives lost and the fear that was burned into our hearts and minds. But ironically, today is also a day to celebrate for the Outspoken Cyclist. It was 11 years ago today. My first guest, Ben Serrata, helped to launch the podcast. I've learned so much from not only the weekly production of the show, but also from the amazing people whom I've had the honor to interview. And I am grateful and humbled by you, those who faithfully listen to the show, send me messages of encouragement and praise, as well as take me to task when you hear something you don't like. You've provided me with great ideas for shows and led me to some of the most interesting people. So as we launch year number 12, let me just say thank you. Thank you for everything that you do that supports the sport of cycling, whether you ride to work or compete at the elite level and everything in between. Here in the U.S., we know that spring is baseball season and football begins in the fall. We have basketball and hockey and golf and tennis, but when September comes around for cyclists, we know it's cyclocross season. And so I thought we should launch cross season with someone who is totally immersed in it. With a deep background in the bicycle business, Justin Christopher parlayed his love for cyclocross into a business while still riding and racing. His company, RideCX, offers up a lot of product that might not be readily available at your local shop. But more than that, Justin gives us a thorough understanding of the sport, as well as what we can expect to see here in the States for the 2021-2022 cross season, and it's a lot. Then after our break, we head to Illinois to speak with the executive director of Ride Illinois, the organization that promotes cycling, works on legislation, and offers education to riders, young and old. Dave Simmons might be relatively new to the position, but his background in education makes him uniquely suited to all the many aspects of advocacy that are so important to growing cycling in each state. And Dave will be with me in the second half of the show. So I thought I knew a lot about cyclocross. I mean, you ride and you run and you get dirty and you can fall down and you can have lots of fun. And it seemed pretty simple to me. And it is. Until you get the bug. You know, the one that says, I'm going to get in there and race at the elite level. Justin Christopher is my first guest, and he does that as well as parlaying his deep knowledge of cross into an extensive website with tips, facts, products, and answers to all the questions you might have about the sport. He also follows all the news and races and reports on them for you. Hi, Justin. Welcome to the Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for joining me today. How are you?
Hey, Diane. Thank you for having me. Good to be here.
Where are you?
I'm in Rancho Cucamonga, California, which is about halfway between Los Angeles and Palm Springs. So we're out in the desert.
Actually, we've been to Palm Springs. I liked it there. Is the background I'm seeing real or virtual?
That is virtual. That is not my actual background. If it wasn't for the fake background, you would just be looking at the plain white wall of my living room.
That's a nice looking background. I like it. So we're going to talk about cyclocross, which, I mean, there's so much else going on, but it is cyclocross season. It's coming up. It actually has probably started in some areas. And while it doesn't seem possible, I guess we need to talk about it. Tell us a little bit about Justin and how this topic became so interesting to you.
Sure. You know, I got into cyclocross in the early 2000s, and it's just a sport that I'm super excited about. You know, I've been riding since I was a teenager, and cyclocross, I think, is just the best discipline for spectating. And it's also my favorite discipline to participate in. I started RideCX just to kind of continue sharing my love for the sport. I love talking about equipment tips and how to, and helping new people get started in the sport. And then I kind of saw an opportunity where on the physical goods side, you're not going to see a lot of specialty tires or embrocation in a bike shop or even at other online retailers. And thought that that was a good opportunity to fit into.
Before you did Ride CX, what did you do?
I have a deep background in the bicycle industry. I've worked for, you know, independent mom and pop local bike shops. I've worked for an online retailer, Jensen USA, for more than a decade. And then my most recent role in the bike industry was at Aventon, helping to launch the Aventon e-bike line into the United States.
Nice. I'm a big e-bike fan, and I do remember Jensen very well. Anyway, I guess what we should do, because a lot of my listeners are older, but I think most of them understand it, let's define cyclocross, because it's not really gravel and it's not really mountain biking. So put it into its own category and give us a definition of cross racing or just riding cyclocross.
So I think, you know, it's kind of a split between mountain bike and road bike, and gravel is probably a pretty good way to put it. Cyclocross is going to take place on a short course. So a race might be 8 to 10 laps of a course that's 2 or 3,000 meters is the official length. So riders are making many loops around, you know, a short course in a city park. And it includes all sorts of different surfaces, dirt, grass, concrete, mud, wet. And kind of the defining feature of cyclocross is the bike swap, the bike exchange, right? Cyclocross has a pit. And if riders want to switch equipment, adjust their tire pressure, or in many cases, change to a clean bike because their bike is covered in mud, you get those really exciting bike changes on the fly in cyclocross.
So let's ask a question about that. For the first time ever, and don't ask me how it ended up on our television, my husband and I were watching NASCAR in Daytona. What I did notice was they would jump off and have tire changes, oil, gas, whatever was necessary. So who manages the bike swap? I mean, do you have assistants? Do you have pit people, I guess you'd call it?
Absolutely. You know, at the elite levels, they can have a whole team with multiple spare bikes. At the amateur level, the pit might just be throwing your extra wheels into the pit and you're self-servicing in the pit. But at the elite level, that whole bike exchange is definitely a key part of the sport that can lead to winning or losing based on the choices that the rider or their pit crew and their mechanic make during the race.
So that's something I did not know at all. I think that's really, really cool. Clearly, I have not been to a cross race, although we have a series here, I think. All right, let me reintroduce you. We're speaking with Justin Christopher. He runs Ride CX. Is it just online?
It is just online. That's right.
So is it ridecx.com?
It is ridecx.com, and it's at ridecx on all the social media networks.
At ridecx. That's a good thing to know. All right, because we'll post all that stuff. You told us about the bike swap. What are some of the basics of a cross race that we would see pretty much every time under the conditions of whatever the weather is, of course?
Absolutely. Cyclocross is an all-weather sport. So if it's hot, you race in the heat. If it's wet and muddy or snow and ice, you race in those conditions too. And you're not just racing the other competitors on the course, but you're trying to choose the technique and equipment that gets you through those weather conditions as fast as possible too. For listeners who have watched a Criterium race, that's probably the closest analogy, right? All the riders start together all at the same time, and cross is usually a known time. So you'll see your race advertised as 45 minutes or an hour. And after the riders have made a few laps, you'll see lap cards that say, you know, 4 laps to go, 3 laps to go, 2 to go, 1 to go, just like a Criterium.
There are classes in cross, and I know cyclocross is sanctioned and then perhaps unsanctioned. So there might be a local cross race that has nothing to do with a sanctioning body like USA Cycling. But on the level that we're talking about elite, how does that work? So when I think of bike racing and let's say road racing, you know, it's Cat 5, Cat 4, Cat 3, 2, 1 Pro. How does cross come into that?
cyclocross in the United States anyway follows all those same category upgrades based on your skill. USA Cycling is the organizing body, just like road and mountain bike, you know, that feeds into the Olympic program at the higher levels. And then, as you mentioned, you know, there's a lot of sort of unsanctioned or independent local series too, depending on where you are. And one of the things that I just love about cyclocross is it has something for everyone at all the different ability and skill levels. So if you just want to show up and hang out with the community and race and drink beer and cheer, that is fantastic. And you're going to be welcomed. If you want to put your power meter and your heart rate monitor on and go as fast as you can, as you rise up in, you know, fitness and ability, there's always going to be someone there to challenge you. So it's for every ability and every age category and every skill level. There's something for someone in cyclocross.
But men and women don't race together, or do they?
They do sometimes. It's usually
cool.
Yeah, it's usually separated by sex, especially at the elite level. But especially your local independent series. Sometimes they'll just have an A, a B, and a C race, and riders can sort of self-seed based on how fast they think they can go.
That's pretty cool. Let's talk a second about equipment, because that is something that you know quite a bit about. What would you say is an appropriate or suitable cyclocross bike?
Well, at the getting starting level, the appropriate bike is whatever you have. We don't want anybody to feel like they're excluded or can't get into the sport because they don't have the right bike. So if you've got an old mountain bike from 1985 sitting in your garage, that's a perfect bike to get started on cyclocross. Obviously, as your abilities grow and you get more interested in the sport, like any other sport, you're going to want to have the specialty equipment that that helps you be your best. But at that getting started level, you're going to find that it's very inclusive. Almost every race series near you has a beginner or a first time category. And if you got a bike that has like two wheels and working brakes, you're going to be allowed in. Obviously, one of the booming categories in bike sales is gravel bikes, right? That's the hot category of the year. And, visually, those can look very similar to what a cyclocross race bike might look like. So if you have a listener that's got a gravel bike in the last couple of years, that is absolutely another great bike to bring to your first cyclocross bike as well.
So I would assume we're talking wider tires, disc brakes, upright bars, although I guess you could use drop bars if you wanted.
At the elite level, a cyclocross bike is almost always going to have a drop handlebar like a road bike. And again, don't get too hung up on equipment restrictions. If you're a first timer and you just want to come out and try it out, if you have a mountain bike with a flat handlebar, you know, nobody's going to squawk about that. But yeah, ultimately, as you get more into the sport and it becomes more specific, you're going to want a drop handlebar bike.
You know what? Let's take a short break. And when we come back, there's some really interesting things going to be happening in the 2021-2022 cyclocross season. We're speaking with Justin Christopher. His work and clearly passion is RideCX. That's RIDECX.com. You are listening to The Outspoken Cyclist. We'll be right back. A bicycle crash is not an accident, and when you find yourself in a situation that calls for experienced, effective, and positive legal support and advocacy, you can depend on any of North America's independent Bike Law members. Bike Law's cycling attorneys are members of our community committed to the pursuit of cycling safety and justice. For more information about Bike Law, log on to bikelaw.com. They're on your left, protecting your rights. We are back on The Outspoken Cyclist. Justin Christopher and I were talking about cyclocross. And when we took our break, we were talking about equipment. Now I want to talk about the upcoming season. So much stuff was canceled in 2020. And cyclocross will open back up in a big way, probably right away. September is when I think of cross season starting. There's always been the New England races. So tell me about this coming season. We've got some really cool things happening in the U.S.
Yeah, I'm really excited about the upcoming 2021-2022 season. As you mentioned, there were so many cancellations in the United States. You know, we had some small pockets of racing, but almost everybody did not get to race their bike last fall. And in addition to amateur racing returning, you know, being able to participate in the sport ourselves, we also have some really exciting stuff coming up from the spectator side. The United States has been blessed with three World Cups coming up this year, which is super exciting. So these are the world's best athletes racing on USA soil in our time zone where we can watch live. And then the UCI also awarded the world championships to Arkansas, and that's in early 2022. So a sport that usually has its focus on, you know, Belgium and the Netherlands, we're going to have a lot of USA focus this season, which is really exciting.
So can you give us the location of the three World Cup races, where they'll be and when?
Sure. So the three World Cups are in Waterloo, Wisconsin, Fayetteville, Arkansas, and then Iowa City. And those races take place at Trek Bikes in Waterloo. Fayetteville is actually a preview or a test event of the same course and venue that's going to be used in 2022 for the World Championships. And then Iowa City, that World Cup is part of the Jingle Cross weekend, which is one of the longest running and best known cross events in the United States.
You know, what's really cool is that they're mid country as opposed to California or New York, or I should say California or East Coast. I'm liking that. Yeah. As soon as you said Waterloo, I'm thinking, oh, that's got to have something to do with Trek. And Fayetteville, of course, Arkansas is trying to be the mountain bike capital of the world. And then Iowa City, this is really cool. And then you said the worlds, right?
World championships. Yeah. The one day world cyclocross championships will be in Fayetteville, Arkansas, early 2022.
So they're going to reuse Fayetteville, which is nice. So right. I guess I'm wondering if you're hearing any pushback about using Arkansas, given all of the stuff that was going on with the trans laws that were being passed, these kind of draconian laws. And I don't know, there seemed to be some people wanted to pull out. Some people said, well, we can't do that. It's a UCI choice. It is not a USA Cycling choice. So are you hearing anything negative about it, or are people getting excited about it?
I think it's a little bit of both. You know, people remain very excited. And then you also, there have been some pushback from athletes and sponsors and teams. You're correct. You know, ultimately, that's not a USA Cycling decision necessarily. This is a UCI international level of event. I don't expect that event to be moved. You know, the UCI, for example, has races in the Middle East, in some countries that have terrible human rights records, frankly. So it's a challenging situation all around, but as of this moment, it looks like things are moving forward at that venue.
Well, the last thing I want to talk about before we once again tell people how to find out more about your work is Katie Compton. So she tested positive recently for anabolic steroids, as I remember. She has been just a phenomenon on a bike. And now people are saying, well, how come? So what are you hearing? What do you think? She's back to racing from what I understand.
You know, I'll paraphrase someone else's comments that I saw. They just said, this is a sad day. And this is the most decorated American cyclocross athlete of all time. You know, long running career, hugely successful on the international stage, and a rider that's just been, frankly, an inspiration to a generation of new cyclists. If she took testosterone to improve her performance, that's sad. If she tested positive because of some contaminated food or supplements, that's sad. You know, regardless of what the specifics are, we may never know, but ultimately is a sad day for the sport.
You know, it harkens back to another athlete who was so popular and who jettisoned cycling into the world's sort of vision. And then the same thing happened. So it is sad. Well, are you seeing anybody on the circuit that we should be watching?
There's some really exciting young riders. And one that I would draw your attention to is American Clara Hansinger. She was the last U.S. Women's Elite National Cyclocross Championship winner before the pandemic shut everything down. She's been racing for a European road team in the interim. She had a really high placing at the last World Championship, by far the most successful American rider. And I'm really excited to see what she can do this fall. She's quite young, and as she continues to mature as a rider, really excited to see what she can do on the world stage.
How about the men's?
You know, the men's category is also super exciting. One that I'm hoping to see return to cyclocross is Christopher Blevins. He's known more for his mountain bike abilities these days. He just won the short track world championships at mountain bike world championships. He's an amazing bike handler. There's some videos floating around the internet of him bunny hopping stairs during cyclocross races that I'd encourage readers to look up. Just an amazing athlete and amazing bike handler. He's having some great success on the world mountain bike stage now, and certainly hope that we'll be seeing him back in some cross races this fall.
One of the things I think about when I think of cyclocross is it's so much fun that even if you fall down, you know, when you fall down on a mountain bike, you can get hurt. When you fall down in cyclocross, you can get dirty. And that's how I look at it. You know, it's like it's probably, I mean, I'm sure there's danger to it, but it seems to me it's kind of an all-age thing. Is there a master's cyclocross category?
Not only is there a master's, it's huge, massive participation numbers in the master's level. I don't have the notes in front of me, but I believe USA Cycling awarded a national championship to a man who was in the 75 to 80 age group at the last national championships. And this is definitely a part of cycling that you can participate in as a lifetime sport. One of the reasons I love cyclocross, especially for introducing new riders to racing, is that the risk level is just so much lower. You know, if I take somebody out to road racing, for example, and you're kind of throwing them to the wolves, right? You know, you're riding in a group at 30 miles an hour, and frankly, hitting the concrete is not very much fun. And in cyclocross, it's a great opportunity to introduce new riders to the sport in a lower risk way. And if you take a corner too aggressively, you fall over in the mud or you land in the grass, right? The stakes are much lower, and that makes it a great entry point for people that are new to bicycle racing.
Yep, I totally agree. Well, I really appreciate you taking time to talk with me today. We've been talking with Justin Christopher. His website is ridecx.com. And get out and get into a local cyclocross race. I know Ohio has them. They probably have them everywhere in the country. And then we want to watch for these three World Cup races coming up, Waterloo, Fayetteville, Iowa City, and then the World Championships in Fayetteville, early 2022. Justin, thank you so much. I hope you have a great cyclocross season.
Thanks so much for having me. Hope to see everybody out there this fall.
And I'm sure you will. You take care. If you want to know more about Justin and cyclocross, log on to his website, ridecx.com. It's a really clean and easy to navigate site with lots of stuff you can learn and even buy. So let's take a break, and when we return, we'll find out what's going on in Illinois when we speak with the executive director of Ride Illinois. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist.
WJCU, University Heights, from the campus of John Carroll University.
We are back on The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Jenks. When you think about Illinois, what comes to mind? O'Hare International Airport? Chicago, the lakefront, the Cubs, the Bears? Nah. How about what's happening in cycling in the state? We haven't talked about it much on The Outspoken Cyclist, but today's the day. And Dave Simmons is the executive director of Ride Illinois. Hi, Dave. Welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for being my guest this week.
Diane, I am super excited to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
It is my pleasure. I'm interested in some of the things that are happening in Illinois. So it's so weird that, you know, we talk about all these cities all over the country and somehow, and states, and I've never really spoken with Ride Illinois or its predecessor, which was a different, was it, you had another name for it.
Yeah, the organization used to be known as the League of Illinois Bicyclists. So that started in 1992, so coming up on 30 years, and was rebranded in 2015 to Ride Illinois.
Well, I think I like the rebranding name, Ride Illinois. I like that a lot. And I know that as executive director, you are relatively new to that position.
Yeah, I started in early October of 2019, you know, not knowing of pandemics and other financial craziness to happen. Yeah, so coming up on 2 years.
And what was it that you were doing before that?
I was working in educational publishing. Worked for various assessment companies, so you know, high stakes assessments and clinical assessments, leading production teams. And then honestly, Diane got the bug. I used to bike a lot as a child, grew up near a very popular trail in Chicago, got married, had kids, kind of, you know, moved away from it, but then got back to it in like 2005 or so, got certified as a league cycling instructor through League of American Bicyclists. And that kind of opened up this whole world to me for advocacy and education and stuff like that. So that's kind of been the, you know, the passion project, the nights and weekends thing for over a decade. And then when I learned that the gentleman who was in the role of executive director at Ride Illinois was going to step down because he had been doing it for quite a while and wanted to kind of semi-retire, I threw my name into the ring. And yeah, now almost 2 years later, I'm happy to say that I'm in the role and certainly no regrets, you know, given everything that's happened. So very exciting move for me personally.
So it's interesting when I speak with people who are in positions such as yours, including the gentleman I spoke with not too long ago from California and just some different areas of the country. It takes a passionate person to do this work. And it's interesting how passionate all of the executive directors of all these different organizations are. And it's always exciting to talk to them because there's this exuberance that sort of comes out in their conversation that I appreciate a lot, that enthusiasm. So good for you. Yes, following your heart.
Yeah, it was, you know, a bit of a leap of faith. And it is definitely like, a, you know, 24/7. It's hard to turn it off, but I imagine most folks in my position or similar positions are, yeah, at the end of the day, they, you know, they want to see more people riding bikes and they want to get things, conditions better for, you know, for cyclists of all ages. And so, yeah, again, but I mean, no regrets. Happy as a clam personally and trying to do some cool stuff here in Illinois.
And I'm glad you're there. That's good because I can see that the organization is doing some really, really cool stuff. So let's talk a little bit about that. I don't remember seeing Ride Illinois before this LinkedIn sort of episode that I just told you about. So tell us about the organization and then about the different programs that you're doing. And there is a piece of legislation that I really want to talk about.
Yeah, for sure. So I mentioned earlier that we were established in 1992 as League of Illinois Bicyclists. So again, coming up on 30 years, the organization has been, it's a solid, though I would say kind of under the radar organization, right? There's a great foundation that was laid by the several people who were in my role, you know, prior to my joining. And in a way it's comforting because if I came in and everything was already kind of maxed out or firing on all cylinders, it'd be really daunting. Kind of in retrospect, it's in a, the organization's in a really good position. And now we get to explore some things that, you know, just hadn't been explored in the past. So, you know, our mission is to make Illinois better through biking. We went through a kind of a slight tweak in the mission statement about a year ago after a workshop where it used to be make biking better in Illinois. We said, well, you know, we want to make this outward facing. We want, you know, everyone to kind of feel included in this. And so if we're making the state better by people riding bikes, you know, that is the goal. And we set it, what may be a difficult to attain goal, a moonshot, to become one of the top five states in the bicycle friendly state rankings that League of American Bicyclists does every few years. Illinois was 16 in the last ranking. So, you know, we've got some, definitely some states to leap over, but at the same time, it helps us to kind of focus on maybe doing things a little bigger, a little better, you know, a little more out of our comfort zone that had been done in the past. And then as far as programs, you know, we've been focusing, because of my background in education, not only as, you know, my prior profession, but also as a league cycling instructor, that really is one of the main focuses that I brought to the organization. So we rolled out, I call it kind of a soft launch, if you will, a program that we've called Ride Illinois Safely. That rolled out back in May. The idea behind that is to make bike safety and bike education more accessible. You know, we're all living in this Zoom world now, so that certainly helps that people are comfortable with that. And we're connecting with libraries, have been a good connection, some schools, individuals, community groups. I'm not going to say that it's gone, you know, bonkers and we're getting requests, you know, coming out of our ears by any means, but we've established a solid foundation. We're learning as we go. We're fortunate to have a group of other league cycling instructors and a part-time staff member who've kind of helped develop the program. We're going to see it through, you know, around here up in the Midwest. It's going to get cold here in what, 6 weeks or so. Yeah, we're going to regroup and we're going to, you know, we'll learn from what we've done this year and then hopefully have a better launch next year. And I should say that there's a Share the Road plate, license plate in Illinois, and Ride Illinois received some funding from that license plate program that has to be, based on our agreement with Secretary of State, has to be used for education. So we're using some of that funding. We're using some funding from a memorial donation to develop the program and then make sure that classes are available regardless of someone has the means to pay for them or not, right? So kind of approaching it from the equity standpoint too. So we have this money we can pay instructors, you know, through Ride Illinois versus requiring people who want to attend the class to, you know, to put up some money, because, you know, some of these classes can be several hours long, high end, and that, you know, that what's typically asked from a registration fee can be prohibitive. So those are all the things that kind of morphed into the program. And like I said, we're learning some things as we go. And I know 2022's offering is just going to be that much better.
Let me take a moment to reintroduce you. We're speaking with
Dave Simmons, yep.
Ah, got that pronunciation right. He's the executive director of Ride Illinois. Are you in Chicago or in a different area of the state?
I am in the Northwest suburbs. Grew up in the city and then moved out to the Northwest burbs, you know, after college.
Cool. Let's talk a little bit about this HB 270, this House bill that was recently passed. Huge step toward biking and walking safely in Illinois. Explain what it is and how it came about and how you got it passed.
Yeah, well, I will say, I'll start with that first question, Diana, how we got it passed. And that was with a lot of support. Really the leading organization for that legislation is the Active Transportation Alliance. They're the Chicagoland advocacy organization for biking, walking, and transit. I'm fortunate to have been a member and worked with them for quite a while. We have a really great working relationship. So many, many kudos to Active Trans or other organizations that assisted as well, but it became this coalition. Okay. And to explain what the situation had been and still is, because the legislation doesn't officially go into effect until January 1st, the Illinois Department of Transportation, known as IDOT, they developed a policy about 15 years ago. It was 2006, 2007, somewhere in that time frame, that stated when IDOT when they would come into a community, think, you know, a new community being built, right, in the suburbs, or an existing state road, you know, within a community, when they would either build new roads or repave the roads, it would be done at no cost to the local municipality. You know, most people are like, hey, that's awesome, right? No complaints. But if that same municipality wanted to add anything else, you know, even something as simple as a sidewalk. So we're not even talking side paths or bike lanes or anything, you know, that might be a little more exclusive, I guess is maybe a good word for it. That municipality had to pay 20% of that those funds. And so what has now happened over 15 years, because many municipalities are cash strapped, is they said, you know what, nah, we'll take the road. Well, you know, give us the smooth pavement, the asphalt. We don't have money for anything else. And so now you've got communities that, you know, don't even have something as simple as a sidewalk to a bus stop or a means for someone to get, you know, from point A to point B in town for short trips by foot or by bike. So that really was a problem that was identified by these organizations. We tried, you know, working with IDOT on a policy, like a policy angle, and that didn't really go anywhere. So really in the end, it became kind of, I won't say our last ditch effort, but, you know, we decided let's see if we can work this from a legislative angle. And that's where the coalition was built. And we shared concerns with, you know, we found a few co-sponsors in the Illinois House. And, you know, it kind of took off from there. There were conversations, there were disagreements, there, you know, it kind of runs the gamut. And in this, Diane, was my first experience, like seeing how the sausage was made, if you will, right? Where people are hanging up on phone calls and, you know, yeah. But in the end, it became a, not only the organizations that were kind of pushing it along, but the support of individuals and advocates around the state was phenomenal. We asked folks to sign a witness slip as a proponent, basically saying, yeah, we want this to go away. We want roads, you know, in Illinois. It's within a mile of the urban center. I mean, you know, all legislation is very detailed. So we're not saying every road, every state road in Illinois is going to have a sidewalk next to it. No, you know, that's not what happened. But we had over 1,000 people sign one of the witness slips. I can't remember if the House or Senate. And then people, there's very little resistance to it. It was passed by the House and then recently became law on, I think it was August 30th.
So what does the law state exactly now? Or should I say it was a law and now it's been sort of amended, it seems.
Well, it was a policy.
Oh, okay.
It was an IDOT policy. It was kind of their interpretation of the complete streets law. And the idea there was, it came from a good place, right? Let's make sure the local municipality has some skin in the game. Like they really want this thing, right? And if we'll ask them for 20%, I get it. You know, I certainly understand where it came from, but it just, the repercussions over those 15 years are unfortunately pretty great. But what the law states is that that 20% match is no longer. The municipality can still decline to get into the specifics. It's bicycle and pedestrian ways shall be given full consideration in the planning and development of transportation facilities, including the incorporation of such ways into state plans and programs. And again, it's within 1 mile. So if you pick the center of town, right, wherever that might be, and it applies to municipalities with populations of 1,000 people or greater. So if that municipality, you know, again, they can say no, thank you. But if the municipality says, yeah, we want a sidewalk, we want, you know, a side path, the law states that IDOT will pay for that versus, you know, really the local taxpayers and that local municipality. It's exciting. You know, the details that had to be worked out, you know, what's the threshold for distance? What's the smallest community that this should apply for? Like all that had to kind of be worked out. And even having a mile from city center, you know, I'm sure you've discussed in the past how many trips are close to home, right?
Right, of course.
And so that's going to have a big impact in that people will just have that option. Prior to that, you know, in some communities, you really didn't have an option unless you were a very confident cyclist or, you know, wanted to walk against traffic. Bad things can happen. So it'll take time for this legislation to have an impact, but you know, all good things take time, right?
So they do. They do indeed. Okay. We're speaking with Dave Simmons. He is the executive director of Ride Illinois. And we're talking about, it was House Bill 270. It passed. And it's making biking and walking better in Illinois, whole state. Let's take a short break. And when we come back, we'll talk with Dave some more. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist. The Outspoken Cyclist is proud to have Bike Law as a trusted partner. If you find yourself in need of legal advice or assistance as it pertains to any cycling issue, log on to bikelaw.com. We are back on The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm Diane Jenks. Before the break, we were talking about House Bill 270, which passed the Illinois legislature and takes the burden of expense off local municipalities that might not otherwise have had the means to add critical infrastructure for biking and walking. When I think about Illinois, of course, everybody thinks about Chicago and that there's this fabulous bike route right along the lake. But one of the questions I have is, will this bill provide for, if a community wants it, anything that isn't necessarily quote-unquote road-related, like a path that connects to something else? Or is that something different?
I think side path is probably the, you know, the most, like kind of pushing the boundaries, if you will.
Okay.
To get a trail, or because this really stipulates along the roadway. Right. So if to get a trail that might connect roadways or communities, that's going to fall under the ITEP, the Illinois Transportation Enhancement Program, or IDNR, that's the Illinois Department of Natural Resources. They have a recreational trail program. So for the purpose of this legislation, it really is, you know, kind of imagine almost like put blinders on and you're really focused on the roadway and space very close to it.
So how are the paths and trails and cross state or around state transportation issues for bicycling right now? Are there expansions? We have some expansions going on of the Ohio Erie Canal towpath. Actually, they're almost done. Ohio just was, we added something like 1,500 new miles on the USBRS. Wow. It's crazy. So yeah. I'm wondering how Illinois is doing and seeing in terms of not just transportation, but also tourism that is biking part of that.
Boy, you know, to answer your first question about how we're doing, I think we're doing okay. The state's not being aggressive. And I literally just had a couple conversations this week about, you know, the states that are close to us that are doing more when it comes to promoting their amenities, right? So, you know, Arkansas is a destination. Missouri with the Katy Trail and I forget the name of the other trail they're building, right? Southern Indiana is another destination. It feels like a missed opportunity, and that was kind of where the conversation went. There's been discussion, nothing firm right now, but, you know, the thought is let's, it's another coalition, if it's maybe it's just a number of interested individuals. We need to make this pitch to the Illinois Convention and Visitors Bureau, the Illinois Department of Natural Resources, who maintains, there's a two trails that literally go across the state. It's the Hennepin Canal Trail out west, and it's in northern Illinois, just south, starts just south of Chicago and kind of shoots straight east-west, if you will. And then the I&M Canal Trail, and those are owned and maintained by the IDNR, but they don't have funding. And so we hear frequently from members, you know, from people who just want to share their concern, like, hey, these trails are almost unrideable. And so the thought in the latest call was, you know, is it one of those, if you build it, will they come situations where you improve the trails and you build up some of the amenities along the trail. And all of a sudden you have something that could compete with a Katy Trail in Missouri, which I've been fortunate, I've ridden it a couple of times, and you've got hotels and wineries and like all these amenities. I don't know. Part of that's got to be getting the word out. But, you know, in Illinois, you've got the northwest part of the state the unglaciated part of the state, you know, Galena and Rock Falls and Sterling, the Illinois River. It's really beautiful. And you've got the southern part of the state, which is similar. You know, where I'm at, there's not a lot of hills.
Right.
So there are areas that have places that many cyclists would want to go to, but it feels like there's not a lot of promotion and marketing to let folks know that those are there. So
it seems to me that when you show bureaus of tourism and that kind of thing, you know, those people and the state budget people, when you begin to show that every mile of bicycle access, especially if it's off-road, if it's not right. part of a regular road, if it's its own path, its own trail, the returns are so high. Number one, building a trail creates jobs. So there's a good one. Mm-hmm. And number two, things do grow up around them. You can look at the East Coast Greenway from Maine to Florida and, you know, there are, or along the Cumberland Trail where little bed and breakfasts and restaurants and all kinds of stuff are popping up. So yeah, I that's probably one of the reasons we haven't spent as much time talking about Illinois is because I'm not hearing a lot about it. So maybe that will change. I hope so. What about the infrastructure bill that's in Congress that hopefully someday will actually come out of the right. Senate and out of the House and like actually make some progress? Is there any money in that? Do you think that Illinois will be able to get to do some of those kinds of projects?
Well, I mentioned the ITEP program, Illinois Transportation Enhancements Program, which there was a big win a couple of years ago, where $50 million was added to that program, which it's, I think, $106 million total for the ITEP program. And those awards came out recently, about a month ago. So that alone was a nice pot of money that allowed more projects to happen. But as far as, the federal infrastructure bill, we, Ride Illinois, is in contact with League of American Bicyclists and Karen Whitaker, who's their kind of their policy hawk. We've been reaching out to elected officials, not specifically about the proportion of money that's going to be spent on this, that, or the other thing, but just about elements of the legislation. Sorry, that are that are going to be important to cyclists. E-bikes, for example, that was the latest ask. Like, how do we make it so e-bikes are accessible and they fall into categories where maybe people can get a small stipend, the commuter bike benefits for riding an e-bike versus just a regular bike. So it's like all these nuances. So not a specific answer to your question, Diane, but that is, with all of these bills, they're so vast and so involved. And so we're fortunate to have League of American Bicyclists to help, call out those things that, like, this part of the bill is going to really have an impact. In the end, we would hope that it would result in, and we would push for more trails or, repairing existing trails, which is all too common of a problem. There's oftentimes funding available to build a trail, but then that ownership transfers to, maybe it's like a forest reserve district or a county, and then that's something else they have to worry about, and there's not always funding to maintain.
Interesting. We've been speaking with Dave Simons he's the executive director of Ride Illinois. We don't speak about this state much, and it's interesting to hear what's going on in a state that is starting to look at bicycling in a, I haven't heard anybody talk about the League of American Bicyclists like you have as a really good resource. And I think it's interesting because a lot of people think, oh, we can do this by ourselves. But the truth is, it takes a village. And so if you can get that kind of information from them, which you can, we have a bike person in the state of Ohio DOT. I mean, a job that is a paid full-time 40-hour a week, that bike coordinator. So mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys have that at the state level, but it's an interest. A lot of stuff has gotten done because of that position.
Well, actually, Diane, yes. There is someone who was hired new, and I'm not going to get his title
okay.
correct, but it's Bike Ped ADA, and it has oversight for the state.
Oh, good.
And we have seen things move further along because this individual has that background. Prior to that, so there's 9 IDOT districts, right? And so prior to that, it was kind of incumbent on each district to kind of, you know, forge their own way, right? Well, now there is oversight from the whole state standpoint, and so it's been great. You know, we as advocates, we're always going to want to push the envelope, right, and ask for more, knowing that we're not always going to get everything we ask for. And he's been very pragmatic and very, you know, down to earth in it, whether we're asking for changes to policy or manuals, or right, some things are accepted, some things are explained to us as to why that can't happen now. So yeah, we too are fortunate to have someone in that role,
and that's good.
And I do think it's going to be very beneficial in the years to come.
Well, for my listeners who live in Illinois and outside of Illinois, why don't you give us the website for Ride Illinois, and then give me some closing ideas about what people can get involved with.
Sure. Yeah. So it's rideillinois.org. Pretty straightforward. As far as how people can, or what to get involved in, or if you're going to our site and what to check out, we have a free online bike safety quiz, bikesafetyquiz.com, developed with the Secretary of State back in 2013 at launch. So it's going around for a while. Take the quiz. There's 4 quizzes: adult cyclist, child cyclist, motorist, truck driver. It's available in English and Spanish. And this is like our attempt to get some information out to the masses, right? Based on our numbers, we've had about 150,000 people take that, including we have a program that will pay schools $2 per student to take the quiz. So that's been really a great way to get the word out to folks. And then I would say one of the newer, more interesting things, and would love to hear from folks, you know, as this takes place, but we have an event, if you will, I'm doing my air quotes here, but starting Friday, running through the following Sunday, so the 10th to the 19th, we're calling it Let's Ride, Illinois, a little play on words there, where we've invited folks all around the state to, you know, plan a ride in their community. We give them some guidelines. We have an organizer toolkit. We created some social media graphics that they could use, a poster template. Right about 20 rides organized. You know, it's been a tough year for timing of this thing and then working with folks to get them organized. But the idea is just go for a bike ride, a casual ride in your community, you know, with a group of folks, and people can take it and do whatever they want. If they want to involve local businesses or have a raffle or whatever it is. Right. And we've seen some really cool ideas. And so, yeah, we're excited. So let's ride Illinois 2021. Just trying to encourage folks to hop on their bike and go for a bike ride with their neighbors. So, you know, just a couple interesting things that we've got going on.
Yeah. My husband loves that idea. He'd love to put something together like that here. And, you know, unfortunately, just the nature of the bicycle business is so interesting. People go, oh, you must ride a lot. And then you have to look at them and say, think about when the bike shops are open and when they're busy, right?
Yeah, I have thought about that. And yeah, talked to some folks. So we appreciate what you guys do, because without the local bike shops, you know, how many fewer people would be out riding?
So true.
Service.
Well, Dave, thank you so much for talking with me today. It's so interesting to learn about what's going on, like, 2 states over.
Yeah.
You're not that far
from me. We're almost neighbors, right?
We're almost neighbors. And I wish you a lot of luck as the new executive director. Of course, now it's old hat. It's been already almost 2 years. But thank you so much, and have a wonderful, wonderful fall riding season.
Thank you, Diane. Appreciate the opportunity. And hey, we'll stay in touch.
Very good. My thanks to Dave and to Justin Christopher for joining me on the show this week. I know I promised you Phil Cavell, but I had my dates mixed up, and he will be here next week to talk about his new book, The Midlife Cyclist, The Roadmap for the 40-plus rider who wants to train hard, ride fast, and stay healthy. Sounds like a plan, huh? I'd also like to let you know that the women and girls of Afghanistan are still being evacuated from the country and will be needing lots of support for resettlement as they start their lives over, scattered around the world. The evacuation and resettlement efforts have been a massive collaboration of people from all over the world, and the women are grateful that they are not being forgotten. There is a separate page about these brave and strong women on the OutspokenCyclist.com website with links to articles and stories, as well as a link to the Resettlement Fund. Please consider making a donation of any amount to fundly.com/support-afghan-cyclists. So I hope you have a great week. Stay safe, stay well, and remember, there is always time for a ride. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Jenks. We welcome your thoughts and contributions on our Facebook page, or visit OutspokenCyclist.com to leave a comment on any episode. We will be back next week with new guests, topics, conversations, and news from the world of cycling. Subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast app and you'll never miss an episode. The Outspoken Cyclist is a copyrighted production of DBL Promotions with the assistance of WJCU-FM Cleveland, a service of John Carroll University. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.